Welcome to episode number 36 of Messing About in Ships for April 1st, 2009. This week we have our normal maritime scuttlebutt and a short interview with Ben Strong from Amver about the 2009 Connecticut Maritime Association's annual shipping conference. And then, as usual, we follow up with some pod-safe music. Welcome to episode number 36 of Messing About in Ships. I'm Peter Mello from Sea Fever Consulting, and my podcasting partner and friend is Captain John Conrad from gcaptain.com. Hey, John, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing, Peter?
I'm doing really well, thanks. Beautiful spring day here, and actually there's a very locally famous restaurant here called the Oxford Creamery. Anybody who's been to Mattapoisett might know it, and Jen picked up lobster rolls for lunch today, which means that spring has sprung.
Sounds delicious.
It is. It's the best around, so it's a good sign that summer isn't too far away when they open up because they close for the winter.
It's interesting. Going back to my maritime history class, they said that lobster was the McDonald's of the colonial period. That it was so readily available, and that people with low economic means would just go down to the beach and pick up lobster. It's kind of a fast food.
Yeah, well, actually, you can get lobster at McDonald's around here, so you can.
Probably not the same.
Not quite, no. But and not the same as Oxford Creamery. So there's a little plug for a local restaurant here. If you're ever in Mattapoisett, you got to check it out. It's like world famous. Funny because last week they opened up, and I saw somebody put it on Twitter or Facebook, can't remember which, and I hadn't seen so many comments to a single post as that. Everybody was longing for that place to open. But anyway, what's going on out there in California?
Yes, the team is just wrapping up from the conferences on the East Coast. First was the Sea Trade Conference for the cruise ship industry in Miami, and then was the all-popular CMA Shipping 2009 conference in Stamford, Connecticut. So I'm picking the guys up at the airport in San Francisco on Sunday, and they all reported a very successful conference schedule.
Excellent, excellent. We do have I did an interview this morning with Ben Strong from Amver. You might remember him from a podcast we did a while back, and we asked him maybe to be a correspondent, and he did a little overview for us this morning about CMA conference, so we'll have a chance to listen to that in a few minutes. So, sounded good.
Yeah, and there are reviews on GCaptain's blog as well as the Maritime Executives. If you go to their, if you subscribe to their weekly newsletter, which is free, Joseph Keefe wrote about it, and Ben posted a lot on Amver's blog. So check out those resources.
Excellent, excellent. What else is going on?
Well, a few news items. One thing I wanted to bring to everyone's attention was a new reality television show. It's our GCAM forum member, Tokyo Buddha. I'm not sure how he picked that name, but anyway, pointed us to a new reality show on Scottish TV titled The Merchant Navy. Which is really interesting. There have been a few, a large number of reality television shows focused on the merchant marine, but like the TV show Carrier and America's Port, this is really focusing in on the individuals that make things happen. So it's really the first show that focuses on merchant mariners.
Excellent. And you said you can watch this online, all the complete episodes?
Correct. They posted all the shows online. It's sponsored by, and I assume paid by, for by a UK government organization for mariners and a number of shipping companies. So they provide it all for free on the Scottish TV website.
Excellent. Very cool. Have you watched much of it?
No. I sure haven't watched too many. I watched two episodes last week. It's just finding time to dive into a new reality TV show. I've been watching the Odyssey Marines television show, Treasure Quest, I believe it's called.
I
got that wrong. That one's been really interesting. They actually found the HMS Victory, one of the first. There have been a number of ships by that name, but this was one of the first large tall ship. Of course, I'm showing my ignorance to tall ship history, but a very important ship for the British Navy, as well as the last episode was on a Victory ship that went down in World War II. And they had some merchant mariners who actually served on the sister ship that was in the convoy during the attacks. They had them on the show and brought them out to the dive site. So that's another really great show that's on TV.
Good. You'll have to put the links in the show notes so people can find them.
Great. I sure will.
So what's up on the piracy front? I think we got some news there too, right?
Sure. Really interesting, but discouraging news. We all know the navies of the world, a large number of them, have come together and are patrolling the Gulf of Aden, the area just to the north of Somalia. And this is really important because it's a choke point. It's where all the shipping traffic kind of comes together as it enters the Suez Canal. It's the only way to get from Asia and the Middle East to the ports of Europe and even the east coast of America. So it's real important. The only alternative is to go around Africa, duck under the Cape of Good Hope. And a number of shipping companies have decided to do just that, kind of throwing aside costs. They've taken the action of saying, hey, let's avoid this Gulf of Aden completely. The problem is, just in the past 10 days, 10 individual attacks have happened off of the east coast of Somalia. This isn't the first time it happened. If we remember, the crude carrier Sirius Star got attacked and hijacked last year, and that was on the east coast of Somalia. But because of this naval presence really strengthened in the Gulf of Aden, the pirates have moved to a new region. This is a lot more difficult for the navies to patrol because it's not a contained area. It's the whole east coast of Somalia. And the pirate attacks have been as far out as 900 miles. On March 5th, there was an attack witnessed 900 miles from the coast.
And 900 miles?
Nautical miles, correct. And if you go to GCAPM's blog, we have a map of the incidents, and you can see they're spread out among, you know, in a wide range. They're not even centralized off of one port. So it's been interesting. There was a sailboat that was attacked. It was on a voyage from the Seychelles to Madagascar, and it's being held hostage right now. And the current estimate of mariners being held is 163.
Now, how are they doing this 900 miles offshore? They have satellite, they have motherships or something? I mean, that's a long way offshore to be finding and identifying. I mean, how do they find the ship, and what kind of technology are they able to use?
Correct. We don't know exactly what technology they use. We know that millions of dollars in ransom money has been put into the area, into the hands of these pirates. And with that money, they could very easily buy such things as AIS receivers, which is going to give you detailed information about ships within VHF range. We don't know specifics. Information saying that they're using quote-unquote pirate motherships. And these are basically fishing trawlers that were seized by the pirates at the early stage of this. And they're using this as a command post to launch these skiffs. They've also gone from using one skiff to attack vessels to a number of skiffs, reports have been up to a dozen. These latest incidents, they are, at this distance of the coast, they're using two skiffs, one to kind of distract the ship as the other, boards. There are numerous problems here. In the Gulf of Aden, it was difficult enough for them to attack these ships. And it's really, they found that you can avoid being attacked by pirates with a combination of preparedness, early observation, and hardening the target. So the successful ships have really prepared their crews, given them advanced training on what to look for and how to deal with the pirates. Hardening the target, they're putting razor wire around the perimeter of the ship. They're locking down all entryways into the accommodations block and so forth. One vessel even used Molotov cocktails to successfully hold off the pirates. And then early observation. And what they're really, doing is buying themselves time, because as soon as they first attack the pirate vessel, they can call the Navy and the Navy will send assets. With the Gulf of Aden, if a vessel's in the Gulf of Aden, the Navy can get an asset to you, and their estimate they need an hour's notice. So ships being able to ward off the pirates for an hour can be protected by the Navy. The problem with the East Coast is the distance between attacks is significantly greater, and there are less naval assets in the area. And this is really of concern, because now all these vessels that are going around Africa are now at real risk of being attacked themselves. So there's no easy solution without a major diversion of your voyage plan.
Wow. Well, problem lingers.
Yeah, there are solutions, but it's questions of who's going to fund these solutions and who's going to implement them. One is we've been working closely with the guys at Aeromech Engineering, saying, hey, let's put UAVs, basically remote control planes. These have advanced capabilities, a few thousand mile range and significant hover times, to kind of put a buffer zone between the shipping lanes and the Somali coast so that they can get even earlier observation and give the Navy even more time to react to oncoming threats. There are a number of other solution providers. We've been working with Global Rescue, ISS Security, and a number of others. But, there's a real question now who's going to pay for the, these solutions. Some think it should be Intertanko, which can divide the cost amongst all the ship owners. Some think it should be the individual ship owners that are transiting the area. Many in the shipping community believe that it's the Navy's responsibility. So no one's really just jumping in and saying, hey, I'm going to fund some of these solutions, and we need aerial reconnaissance here or advanced training, et cetera.
Interesting. Well, we'll keep our eye on that one. You have any other news items you want to discuss?
No, those are the major ones. How about you?
Oh, it just this week, the U.S. Brig Niagara, which is a tall ship out of Erie, Pennsylvania, it's a state-owned vessel. It's affiliated with the Erie Maritime Museum. Basically, they, because of this economic crisis and problems that states are experiencing with shortfalls, and they are a state-owned vessel, they've had to cancel they're in the process of reviewing a cancellation of their sailing season. Which is really too bad. The Niagara is one of America's most spectacular tall ships, probably the most spectacular after the Bark Eagle. She's a replica of the flagship that Commodore Oliver Hazard Perry used to defeat the British in the Battle of Lake Erie in the War of 1812. She tells a great story. She's just a spectacular looking, she's beautiful vessel, and she has incredible educational programs and sail training programs. So be a real loss to the industry, be a little real loss to the professional mariners in the tall ships industry that sail aboard her, because she does have a crew. So we're keeping an eye on that. There is a Facebook campaign, so if you're on Facebook, I encourage you to find the don't let the flag U.S. flag. Let me pull it up here. The U.S. flag ship Niagara. Don't give up the ship campaign. Famous slogan by Oliver Hazard Perry, and that is the slogan of the Niagara. And they're trying to just get as many members to sign up for this nonprofit campaign as possible, and they're trying to raise some money as well. But I think if messing about in ships, listeners could if you're on Facebook, if you go over there and join that campaign. If you can't donate in money, that's okay, but just sign up for the campaign. Just show your support and interest, because there is going to be a public hearing about it. And if you have an interest in maritime education as well as preservation of maritime heritage, it's I think it's worth your time to find seek out the cause on Facebook and support it. It's a great ship. And the only other thing, I had an email come in this morning I thought was a little interesting. Maybe you got one of these too, but I got an email. It's from the U.S. Coast Guard, basically looking for marine inspectors. Have you seen this?
No, I haven't.
It's a job solicitation. I think it's through a third-party company. It looks pretty evident to me it is. But anyway, it's an HTML email with Coast Guard all over it, and it says, "Marine Inspector, put your unique maritime know-how to protecting America's coastlines and ports. Use your keen judgment skills to inspect vessels in accordance to laws at sea. Be on the front line to preserve the environment and to assure safety. Responsibilities is U.S. and foreign vessel compliance, review and inspection, providing reports and evaluations, training civilian and military marine inspectors." And it just says, here's the requirements. You got to be a U.S. citizen. You got to be in good physical competence, hearing and sight. Understanding of the laws and regulations relating to vessels, ports, and pollution prevention. Knowledge of classification society rules, standards of industry and professional engineering societies. Knowledge in marine engineering, welding, testing, and safety. For information and to apply online, visit uscg.mil/civilian. So anyway, it looks like the Coast Guard's looking for marine inspectors, and if there's anybody out there who's looking for a job, because we know there's lots of people out there looking for a job right now in the country, and you have this type of background and experience, it might be worth looking into.
Yeah, this is a really hot topic now too. Traditionally, the Coast Guard brought in people of advanced experience for a while. They were taking merchant mariners, giving them commissions later on in life, older individuals, and making them marine inspectors. And then you'd stay in that job for a significant period of time. Over the last 10, 20 years, they've kind of moved towards giving the jobs to Academy graduates, young ensigns and lieutenants, and who didn't really have the experience to really find the harder to find safety problems on board ship. So this has really been a call by the industry. Hey, we need experienced guys back in these positions, and the Coast Guard's really listening and looking to get things back on track here.
Well, it's interesting. So, anyway, it's an interesting way to solicit. Those kind of just came in through my inbox, and obviously on some kind of distribution list. And it looks like an agency might be working with the Coast Guard and trying to fill these slots. But anyway, thought I'd pass it along. And if there's any messing about in ships listeners who are looking for a job, there you go. It's another
Yeah,
public
and
service
then
announcement.
GCAP sponsor FastStream has just opened up their services to mariners looking for shipboard jobs. So they were just shoreside recruitment. Now they're landing guys seagoing position. So a lot of opportunity out there.
Good, good. Well, this week we have Ben Strong, who is going to give us a report about the CMA conference in Connecticut. So should we give that a listen?
Absolutely.
great. Thanks, Peter. I really appreciate it. You know, Amber had what I consider, what we consider to be a very successful time at the Connecticut Maritime Association Shipping 2009 Expo this year in Stamford. I feel that there were more people on the floor. Certainly, I think everybody who attends and those who kind of hear about it would agree that it's probably, if not, you know, the biggest, not in terms of exhibitors, but in terms of kind of power brokers and powerful people that attend, it's probably the most influential or most important maritime exhibition in the United States. It's not uncommon to see somebody buying or selling a ship over a glass of beer down at the bar. So that lets you know, and then Amber's there. So that lets you know the kind of the power and the influence of the people that attend. But this year was neat because there were so many of us that were able to apply some of our social networking tools while we were there. So there were at least five people tweeting and our five organizations tweeting. There were updates on Facebook. I mean, it was really nice to be able to share the experience, and there were some very timely talks on, you know, piracy, the environment, the state of kind of the economy, and how it's affecting the maritime sector. So not only were the participants and registered delegates able to share that information, but then we were able to kind of spread that message via social networking like Twitter and Facebook. It was really it was a lot of fun.
Excellent. I was definitely following you during that time period. I wasn't able to make it, but I really appreciate you giving us an inside look on what was happening. So for those of us who've never been, can you give us a little rundown of how long the conference is, roughly how many people might attend it, and then basically what's the kind of the layout both physically and chronologically, like, you know, during the course of the few days, you know, there are constantly talks going on, that type of thing. So you know, first of all, where is it exactly?
Yep, the Connecticut Maritime Association has their conference in Stamford, Connecticut. It's at the Stamford Hilton Hotel, and it's been there for as long as we've been going, and we've been either attending or exhibiting for 5 years now. And it started as a very, very small shipping exhibition and conference, and has grown to its size right now, which is intimate, is probably the best word to use, by comparison to things like the Greek Shipping Exhibition Posidonia, the big Norway Shipping Exhibition in Oslo, Norse Shipping, or if people go to SMM in Germany, you know, those are just huge mega expos. This is more intimate, and there are usually between, I think, 1,500 and 2,000 registered delegates. I think this year there was the number I kept hearing bannered about was about 2,000 delegates, and there may have been a few more walk-ins. So while I say intimate, it's still pretty large.
Right.
And, you know, the conference program, the conference is 3 days. It's usually the third week in March, usually around the 20th or thereabouts. This year it was the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. So it's an annual conference and expo that you can plan on for next year, again, around that same time frame. I'm not sure if they've set the date or not yet. And then Monday starts after 12 noon, everybody gets set up. And then we got kind of delegates got a state of the industry address. So the Vice Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, Admiral Vivian Cray, was there. Congressman Elijah Cummings, who chairs the Subcommittee on Coast Guard and Maritime Transportation Affairs, was there. And then some of the really big names in shipping, BIMCO, Intertanko, Halmepa, pick an acronym, pick a large advocacy organization for shipping, or pick a big name in shipping, and they're usually in attendance. This year, Connecticut Maritime Association, or CMA, awarded their Commodore Award to Captain Wei Jiafu, who's the group president and CEO of China Ocean Shipping Company. So, I mean, by day three, there was a large contingent of Costco personnel. But it ranges the gamut from, you know, able-bodied seamen up to president and CEO. I mean, even sea cadets, Mass Maritime, Coast Guard Academy, Kings Point, SUNY Maritime, pick a regional academy, and they're there. So you really get an incredible cross-section of people. And it's, while it's, you know, I'll say it's heavy hitters, it's also, you know, coat and tie, loosen your tie by the end of the day, have a cold beverage, and just kind of hang out with great shipping folks.
Excellent. And you've been going the 5 years, you said?
I have, yes. We haven't exhibited all that time. We've exhibited 2 years now, and Amber is looking forward to exhibiting next year as well.
Great. And so what was the mood like? You know, we read the newspapers, Wall Street Journal. We see, you know, shipbuilding orders are being canceled and shipping rates, container rates and dry bulk rates are kind of going through the floor. What was the general mood there about the economy and the maritime economy in particular?
What a good question, Peter. You know, I think the while certainly there was a bit of I don't want to call it a pall, but there was some a somber realization that, you know, the economy is certainly not booming as it was even a year, you know, 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. But there was plenty of optimism in the air. And I think folks were very eager to kind of look forward to, you know, to rates changing and to shipping to kind of start on the uptick. And I know that Captain Wee from Costco echoed an optimistic sentiment in his comments during the gala dinner that, you know, shipping is looking forward, you know, to the new opportunities and new ways of I don't want to say dealing with the market, but maximizing the market's potentials.
Great. So here's a layup question for you. Were there any awards at the CMA given out?
What a setup. thanks. Yes, there were some awards. And actually, not to self-promote, but since you've asked the question, Amver was very surprised, honored, and humbled to earn the Professional Mariner Magazine Samuel Plimsoll Award for outstanding service to safety. It was really a shock, and we didn't learn about it until shortly before the event, which I think makes earning an award like that something very special. And in the remarks that I made during the luncheon, I said, you know, it is humbling to receive the award, but Amver wouldn't be successful at safety without the participation of without the participation of the 18,000 plus ships that are enrolled in the system. So while I was very, very happy to receive that award, I want to make it clear, and I made it clear at the lunch, that it really belongs to the maritime community. But we're honored to have it hanging in our visitor center here in New York, and anybody who wants to come down and take a peek and meet us is always welcome to do that.
Excellent. Congratulations. And it's not self-promotion when the host asks you about the...
Thank you.
Great. And we chatted for a few minutes about Twitter, and you had some ideas going forward maybe about using the power of Twitter to spread the word. You want to share any of those thoughts with Messing About in Ships listeners?
Absolutely. And as more and more people, and this is the neat thing I feel about the power of Twitter, is you don't have to be Amver or, you know, or Lloyd's List or Maritime Executive Magazine. You don't have to be a big entity to use Twitter. And the news and the stories that comes out of Twitter, which can go to your computer, which can go to your, but it can also go to your mobile phone via text message. If I'm reading the maritime journals correctly, it appears that a lot of crew members nowadays are able to get GSM phone coverage on some vessels while they're underway. Think of the power of being able to share important maritime stories, not just with other industry leaders or decision makers or policy makers, but with the actual engineer or the lifeboatman or the steward on the cruise ship. So I think, or at least something that I would like to see is at these other shipping exhibitions, North Shipping or Safety at Sea or Posidonia or NEVA, I'd like to see more people using Twitter and then tweet ups, as they're called. Let's get together and collaborate on sharing the information with a wider audience. And then, you know, I would say perhaps next year at CMA, if they're listening, it would be great to do a social media panel. It doesn't have to be an all-day affair or an all-afternoon affair, but maybe just a panel on what is social media, how can you use it to spread the word and you know, maximize your presence because I think people want to know what's going on. And there's no better way, in my opinion, than using social media to share that. So perhaps we'll all be on a panel next March in Stanford and talking more about social media. And then as we're out at these different events, we'll be tweeting it up at the cocktail receptions.
Well, sounds like a good idea. Sounds like definitely a good idea. Any other thoughts about what took place this weekend at CMA?
It was refreshing to see that people were optimistic, that there wasn't such a, CMA, like most shipping conferences, didn't have a, it didn't feel like a funeral, that's for sure. I mean, people did seem upbeat. People were acknowledging the challenges that they have, and we're very, very eager to learn, how to overcome them, and then, to look towards the future, because certainly things that go down eventually come up, and everybody's recognizing that, it's time to put our heads together and work past this economy and continue with shipping. One thing that I thought was a point that was important that I don't think the general public understands, and that is that shipping is by far the most cost-effective, environmentally friendly way to get goods from point A to point B. And I think a lot of people forget that. And if there's ever a time for shipping to increase and to promote, that fact that we can move more goods cleaner than any other means, this is the time to do that. So hopefully, that kind of word will spread out to the general public.
Great, great. Well, great to hear an update, what happened at CMA from you. We talked about you being a correspondent for us. That's our first opportunity. What's hot over there at Amber right now? What's keeping you busy?
Busy time of year for us, springtime, as we start to prepare all the Amber Awards. And this is a really busy year in that we've got almost 6,000 awards that we'll be distributing. And the awards, these aren't for particular rescues or things of that nature. Anytime a ship is available in the Amber system at least 128 days out of the year, then they're eligible for what we call our Amber Participation Award. So we are really thrilled that we've got, almost 6,000 ships that were on plot at least 128 days. And definitely our work is cut out for us as we get these awards processed and mailed out to all the shipping companies. I was surprised at the number of mariners that came up to us at CMA and said, "Where's my award?" So we'll get there. We'll get there. Let us get through CMA and then we'll get the awards processed and out in the mail. So as they say, the check is in the mail. The award is in the mail.
Excellent, excellent. And one last question actually about CMA. Did you end up signing up any Costco ships?
I'm glad you asked that, and I hope that Captain Way is listening to us right now. But we did get an opportunity to talk briefly, and we thanked the Costco president and CEO for their participation and challenged them, invited them to enroll the rest of their vessels. And I think we have a much stronger open dialogue, and perhaps the next time we talk, I can say that indeed we have the entire Costco fleet enrolled. So as this is broadcast to China, they know where to go to enroll the ships, and we look forward to having them participating in full with Amber.
Well, that would be cool, and it maybe help a little bit Chinese-American maritime relations. So
absolutely.
Well, Ben, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to us about what took place there, and let's hopefully you can keep us updated on everything happening over there at Amber.
I will. Thank you, Peter.
That's a Podsafe band we've played before called the Dandy Warhols, and the song was The World, The People Together. Hope you enjoyed it, and we hope you join in the conversation. Send us an audio file, attach it to an email that directed to podcast@messingaboutinships.com. We'll find a way to integrate it into the show, because we'd love to hear your voice as part of the show. Of course, leave comments for us over at the show blog, which is messingaboutinships.com, over at John's Great G Captain, the premier spot on the internet for professional mariner information, with his blog, the Mariner Tools, the forum, very active forum. That's gcaptain.com. Visit my blog, which is a maritime culture blog called Sea Fever, and that's SEA-FEVER.org, and I'd love to hear from you over there. Finally, this week we're going to close with some more Podsafe music. I heard this initially on C.C. Chapman's Great Accident Hash podcast. It's the band Wendy and Lisa, and the song is Invisible. So thanks again for being with us, and we look forward to talking with you soon.